A brand new week of baseball is upon us, and we can actually talk about baseball news. The lockout's over. Spring training is underway. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to Locked On Brewers. I'm Dominic Catronio, along with Vinny Rotino. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more odds, more props, and more lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. He's a former big leaguer turned broadcaster. I am a minor league broadcaster turned statistician, and we are here to give you all of your Brewers news of the day since we can finally talk about actual baseball things happening, Vinny. Spring training is underway. The guys reported to camp yesterday. What's report day like? As you're walking through the parking lot, you got all your bags on you and just waving and saying to everybody, what's that walk like for everybody going back into camp?
It's awesome, right? I mean, it was different for me probably than opposed to like a guy like a Prince Fielder who was established and, you know, was making a great big chunk of money compared to what I was making. But it's all the same. Like, guys are looking forward to seeing each other. You haven't seen each other since all off season, kind of catch up. It's a lot of joking around with each other in the clubhouse, and it's a lot of fun. But yeah, it's a lot of just hopefulness of the season. So that's probably what's gonna happen.
So we talk about things that we can actually talk about again as far as transactions, and there's a major one to talk about as far as the Brewers bullpen. We also have your questions coming up here on this Mailbag Monday, and we're going to talk a little bit about the free agency market right now and why things are a little stagnant, but there have been some trades and a lot of rumors swirling. But let's just jump into the Brewers bullpen. Brad Boxberger has signed a one-year deal with the Milwaukee Brewers to return to Milwaukee. $2.5 million deal with incentives worth up to $500,000. So it's a win-win for him. He pitches better. He gets more money. Maybe some analysts thought he could have got more money on the open market, but he's returning to a contending team in a role that probably won't be as prominent as it was last year as far as seventh inning is set. He seems to be maybe the backup closer when Hader can't go on back-to-back days or three straight days. He can be a sixth-inning guy. He can be a seventh-inning guy. He can do a variety of roles for you. But we've hinted about this all winter long. If you can get Boxberger back, it's a spoil of riches given the way this bullpen looks. And holy cow, this bullpen is looking really good right now.
I love Brad Boxberger. I love this signing. This guy was so good this last year for the Brewers. What he did was he changed his arm slot and his arm swing, right? He used to be a really long arm swing guy, and it created a situation where he had a really good changeup because of it, because he got more fade to it. But his fastball command was low, was down pretty much his entire career. He always threw strikes, but his command, it wasn't great. Now he's shortened up his arm action. He's kind of throwing darts now, and his fastball has a ton of ride to it. He still has a pretty good changeup, but, I mean, he really has just an absolute dominant fastball at times, little cutter to go along with it. And what makes this guy special for me is the fact that he has the ability just to have total ice water in his veins. He's not intimidated by the big moments. I mean, this is a guy who saved 40 games, I think, for the Rays back in, you know, mid-2010s. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Dom. I'm sure
2015, he was an all-star. He had 41 saves.
Unbelievable, right? So, I mean, this guy has been there, done that in terms of closing games at the end of the game. So now the Brewers, they have six all-star type, Cy Young type starters, in my opinion, if you count Ashby, and then you hand the ball over to Boxberger. I do think he's going to man the seventh inning. Then you got Devin Williams in the eighth, and then Hader in the ninth. So it's like, man, these games are just get a little bit of a lead, and the Brewers are going to handle their opponents pretty handily. I think Boxberger is going to have the exact same season, personally. I know he threw a lot, but this guy is very low effort to what he does, and he took the ball a lot, and I think he's going to have a monster season again.
And to your point, taking the ball a lot, he did end very poorly by, you know, what the earlier part of the season was like. I mean, he had a really rough September. We can't ignore that. And you could argue it was because he was out of gas. It was a career high in appearances. In fact, he led the team in appearances last year. He was one of the only healthy guys for 100% of the season last year out of that bullpen. So he was a vital cog to the success of the Brewers last year. And I know you say the seventh inning, but I look at this team, right? And obviously you've got Josh Hader, and it's clear Josh is not going to be going multi-inning saves anymore. We didn't see it in the playoffs, and we're not going to see that in the future for him. What I see is if Hader goes back-to-back and you have another save opportunity the next day, Brad Boxberger will be getting the ball as opposed to Devin Williams. And then the other thing, because you re-signed Brad Boxberger, that eases the load on a guy like Jake Cousins. So I think everything gets better because the roles can be fluid. It's and still established if you so wish, but you have a bona fide all-star closer in Brad Boxberger to complement the best closer in baseball and Josh Hader, and the best setup man in baseball and Devin Williams, and one of the up-and-coming right-handed arms in baseball. I'm not saying he's, you know, going to be an all-star or anything like that, but Jake Cousins turned a lot of heads last season, and this signing adds protection to all three of those other guys to make their roles more solidified and give them the chance to say, all right, well, if I'm down today, I don't have to worry about hurting the team because maybe Brad can step up, maybe Jake can step up, even Brent Suter can step up. He saved a couple games last year. It's a freakish deep bullpen, and we talk about the starters all the time, and this really locked things up, and it's a great move by David Stearns and company.
100%. And to your point about maybe you could have got more on the open market, maybe this guy wanted to come back to Milwaukee. I'm not sure on that, but the fact that he signed for a $2.5 million deal when other guys are signing for a little bit more money that did not have as good of a season, you know, I know he is going to be into his age 33, 34 season this next year. But again, there's such low effort. There's an athleticism here to the delivery. It's so repeatable. So I think he is going to be able to maintain his stuff despite being 33, 34. Now, you make a really good point. Jake Cousins is going to have to step up. I wonder if they're going to – I know that they're going to add more bullpen arms in probably the minor league free agent type signings like they did. Well, they picked up Hunter Strickland off of waivers, but they seem to really just have a knack for finding these guys. Trevor Gott is a name. Mm-hmm. I know Angel Perdomo is still on the 40-man. He could be a guy that steps up. They're probably going to need at least one more guy. Gustave could be another guy that steps up. Miguel Sanchez, he stepped up at times last year. So they're going to need one more at least guy like a Hunter Strickland in that – just a reliable guy, just to just take the ball maybe in the sixth, and just kind of bridge to the back end of the bullpen. I know they have they're spoiled, right? You just named all those dudes, and I just named a few more. But championship teams gonna probably need one more guy, especially in that sixth inning.
And another guy, and I'll let you kind of take it away after this, is that J.C. Mejia, remember, was another trade. You mentioned Trevor Gott, acquired right before the lockout started. J.C. Mejia from Cleveland is another guy that was acquired right before the lockout started. Very limited time last year, 17 games with the Guardians, 11 of them were starts. He's really a reliever by trade in his entire career in the minor leagues. He's a Dominican right-hander. He was acquired in a player to be named later trade, and your heart was broken when they announced who that player to be named later was today in catching prospect Fry. Why do you love Fry so much? We talked about it a little bit with Garrett Green on Friday.
Yeah, I love David Fry. That one stung a little bit for me. I actually do think there's a catcher in here. He reminds me a lot of Michael Barrett. Michael Barrett was a third baseman, drafted as a third baseman. I think he immediately converted to catcher, similar to Fry. But Fry actually converted to catcher, then went back to being more of that utility role, third, first, behind the plate. But he just can do it all. This guy's very versatile. He doesn't play in the middle, obviously, but the fact that he can catch and do some things around the field on the corners is a really valuable thing. Hits left-handed pitching, has a very quick bat, can drive the ball to the gaps and over the fence. Again, I think I wanted the Rangers to acquire this guy and put him behind the plate for 120 games for three seasons in a row until he figured it out, because I do think there is a bat in here and I do think there's a catcher in here. Now, whether or not he's going to develop that way and get that much opportunity to develop that way, who knows? But this was a good pickup, I think, by the Indians, and unfortunate for the Brewers to have lost this guy, but it's, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But JC Mejia, good arm, really good out of the pen, so that he's probably going to fit that role as well. I didn't even mention that name as an option for the pen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And just to wrap up some transactions here for the Brewers, they also announced their non-roster invitees because spring training starts officially today with camp workouts, and then their first game will be on Friday. Notable names on the non-roster invitees, of course, is going to include Ethan Small and Bryce Turang at shortstop as well. Tyler White, who was acquired in the offseason. Mark Mathias is healthy again. He is a non-roster invitee, so just a few names to keep an eye out and we'll be talking about throughout spring training. Before we move on to talk about the grander scope of free agency and trades happening now that the freeze has been lifted, we're going to tell you about BetOnline. And of course, we know what month it is. It's that time of year in college basketball. The tournament is finally upon us. From all the latest odds, contests, and player props, BetOnline.net is the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. BetOnline remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, news, and podcasts this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn all about the trends and get in on the action at BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, a little peek behind the curtain here real quick for everybody as we prepare to start our second segment here talking about the picture of free agency and trades and things like that. When we stopped recording, Isaiah Conner-Falefa was still a Twin and Gary Sanchez and Gio Urshela were also still Yankees. So we're jumping back in real quick, reacting to not only that trade, but a free agent signing. Nelson Cruz, a target of the Brewers, is now a Washington National. So if we make any other mistakes here in the show about, if you hear a slip of like, oh, we'll see if Cruz, where he signs or what they're going to do, things like that. Well, I just missed it. Okay. So this happened at, we were already done recording and Vinny coming out of bed, being a trooper and hanging out with us to give the update, immediate reaction to this trade. Holy cow.
I don't even really know. I mean, it's kind of a blockbuster here, right? I mean, so Kiner got traded over from the Rangers to the Twins. You thought that he was going to man shortstop for the Twins after they didn't re-sign Andrelton Simmons. And so now all of a sudden, who's going to play shortstop for the Twins? So he goes over to the Yankees, and he's been a target for the Yankees from what I've heard. And so now, so he and Josh Donaldson also go to the Yankees. So coming back is a really productive player in Gio Urshela and also a productive catcher Sanchez, who now that they have, so Jeffers is going to have to caddy to Gary Sanchez. You thought Jeffers was going to be a starting catcher at this point for the Minnesota Twins. I don't know. I think the Yankees probably got the better of this one. Although I do love Gio Urshela, Gary Sanchez kind of a, and again, I hate saying disparaging things about players, but I just don't see him winning a World Series behind the plate or a team winning the World Series with Gary Sanchez behind the plate. So that is a thing that I just think the Yankees kind of got the better of this deal. I've always loved Josh Donaldson, despite, you know, some of the questionable maybe antics at times from him, but he is a heck of a player when he is healthy. So I think the Yankees won this one.
Now, it's to be noted, too, the Yankees are taking on all of the money of the Josh Donaldson contract, all $50 million of it, freeing up the books for the Twins as well. So that's something to keep an eye out as well for two. And the other signing before we get into the rest of the episode is Nelson Cruz signing with the Nationals. And we'll talk about it later on in throughout the week, I'm sure. But, you know, this was a target of the Brewers. A lot of Brewers fans thought they had a chance at Nelson Cruz. And then the number that came out of $13 million for this 1 year, but there is a mutual option for a second year. So maybe that's where it could have hung up or things like that. But the fact is, there is an option for 2 years of Nelson Cruz with the Nationals and 1 year guaranteed of $13 million.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't think, and we talk about that, we didn't think that the Brewers would make much of a splash to acquire a DH at this point. He is a name that we both kind of liked. We just didn't think it was going to happen for the Brewers. And this is a lower number that I originally thought Nelson Cruz was going to command, especially now that all 30 teams are looking for a DH and the, you know, obviously the demand is going up for him. But yeah, I mean, good for him, you know, 13 mil and a chance to to be a 2-year deal, it sounds like, but he's good. He's still good. He's ageless. My goodness. How is he still hitting bombs at this rate? And he's a productive hitter. He's not just a power hitter. So this is a really good signing, I think, for the Washington Nationals.
So he is not going to be a Brewer. He is still 51 home runs shy of 500 for his career.
Wow.
And he will be doing it at Nationals Park, it looks like. So we just wanted to jump in with a little peek behind the curtain because we record these the night before so that it's ready for your inbox here first thing in the morning on Mondays. We were already editing at the time these trades came out. So quick hop in. If there are any other slip-ups, I apologize that the information isn't current. But again, the Yankees now have Josh Donaldson and Isaiah Conner-Falefa, as well as Wisconsin native Ben Rortvedt, yes, by the way.
Yes.
Shout out to Madison. He Verona, right, I believe. But he,
yeah, west side of the state. West side of the state, yeah.
There you go. But then also the Yankees send Gio Urshela and Gary Sanchez over to the Twins, and Nelson Cruz is now a National. And we're going to get on with the rest of our segment here. So, hey, Vinny, thanks for rolling out of bed, by the way.
Hold on. I got to say something to everybody that listens. Dom is quite, you guys are spoiled, and I'm spoiled having Dom as a partner. I mean, this guy, I would have been like, whatever. We'll just talk about it tomorrow. Dom gets me out of bed. Actually, I wasn't in bed yet.
The story, Vinny. It's about the story.
I know. You know what? I appreciate you. I would have been like, screw it. Let's just do it tomorrow.
I just wanted to give you the chance to hop in before I just did it myself, basically.
I think my point is the fans of this show really appreciate your dedication. And I'm saying that it's super serious. Like, I appreciate it. Thank you for your dedication on making sure everything is up to date and current.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. So hope you all enjoy the rest of the episode. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Let's get on with it. As we get ready to look outside of the realm of the Brewers, we want to remind you, thanks for making us your first listen today here on Locked On Brewers. Don't forget, we've also got Locked On MLB Prospects, which, as you're hearing about all these trades that are happening right now, Locked On Prospects with Lindsey Crosby, the host. He's a prospect encyclopedia. He's going to get everything done for you. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Lindsey does a great job with Locked On Prospects. Now, as far as trades go, we did have a handful this weekend here, Vinny, in case folks might have missed it. That wasn't the only trade the Twins made, though. They also acquired Sonny Gray from the Reds. They also acquired a pitching prospect from the Reds in exchange for their top pitching prospect. The Twins sent Chase Petty back to the Reds, who was the hardest throwing high school prospect in last year's draft, their first pick from a year ago. And another big trade from the weekend was the Mets acquiring Chris Bassitt from the Oakland A's, solidifying their rotation in exchange for two prospects. So we can get into free agents in a little bit, but trades are about to get really crazy here. Guys like Matt Chapman, Matt Olson are still available. You're going to figure maybe some other teams might continue their fire sale, like Mike Moustakas with the Reds. There's a lot going on here, but what do you make of these early trades so far?
I love it. I love trades. This is the most exciting thing in the game for me, as opposed, well, I'd say the Rule 5 draft is my most exciting and
RIP
most fun
the
thing
Rule 5
to cover.
Draft. RIP, it's canceled this year.
I know. It is canceled this year. But I love these trades. So that Rangers trade, and most of these trades are like kind of like a fair kind of a deal, it seems, right? So like it's just like who's better at scouting between Isaiah Conner-Falefa and Mitch Garver, who's going to be more productive big leaguer going forward. And obviously Ronnie Enriquez was a pitching prospect for the Texas Rangers that was included in that deal as well. So if you know, I love seeing these things play out. I love going back in time years from now and seeing how these things played out, because always it seems one team looks like, you know, like it was a terrible deal. In about 4 years, it might look like a terrible deal for one of these teams. But I do love how these trades and these transactions are going on right now. And like you said, it's going to get really crazy here in these next few weeks here, and just to obviously to fill these rosters. And like you said, the transaction freeze really affected things, and it's going to really come to a head here in the next couple of weeks.
and a few free agents that have signed. But some free agents that signed over the weekend include Carlos Rodon with the Giants getting $44 million over 2 years. For a guy with a history of shoulder issues, that's a heck of a gamble by San Francisco. Clayton Kershaw returns to the Dodgers on a one-year deal. Yusei Kikuchi bolsters Toronto's pitching staff, who is quietly really building up their arms despite losing Robbie Ray. Yusei Kikuchi goes for 3 years, $36 million to the Blue Jays. The White Sox help their bullpen out, given, you know, they've already got Liam Hendricks, the second-best closer in baseball, and Craig Kimbrell's not going to be the eighth-inning guy anymore, so now they add Joe Kelly to be a situational righty. He's good for 2 years now with the White Sox. And Adam Ottavino goes to the Mets for 1 year and $4 million, and you compare that to Brad Boxberger getting 1 year, $2.5 million. That's an example of, well, Boxberger could have maybe got just as much in the open market, but decided to come back to the Brewers.
Yeah, so 100% agree with that last statement about Boxberger. And, you know, there's some names that sound interesting here for the Brewers. Yeah, I mean, there's some guys out here. Did you mention Alex Colomé also signed?
I did not mention Colomé.
For a big deal. That was an interesting arm that obviously the Brewers aren't going to pay that much for a reliever because they tend to not overpay for relievers in the back end of the pen. So, but that guy has been really, really productive. I mean, it's starting to get interesting. I love hearing these deals and these transactions. It's a lot of fun for me to follow. Nick Whitgren was a name that I thought the Brewers might kind of snag. It might have been a situation where they're getting a little bit crunched on their 40-man roster and they have other needs at this point, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But Nick Whitgren's a guy that I really have liked, and he's obviously going to end up in St. Louis on a one-year, $1.2 million deal. So, We'll see. There's going to be a flurry more moves. I don't expect the Brewers to make any huge splashes, but we never know.
There's a money tie up here too, and I tweeted this earlier today. This is looking like on paper it's going to be the largest opening day payroll in Brewers history, and it won't be close. It'll be by more than $10 million. The previous high was $108 million in 2019 for opening day rosters, and then that eventually swelled to almost $140 million by the year's end. Whereas this year, they're going to start right around $122, $123 million after arbitration is done. And then whoever you acquire, or maybe you sign somebody, I mean, $2.5 million to Boxberger certainly helps things. But it's something to keep in mind that you're already walking into uncharted waters for Brewers history. And it's already a pretty set team as far as its core. Look, they're not going to get Carlos Correa. Look, Carlos Correa, Freddie Freeman, and Nick Castellanos, and Chris Bryant, those guys, they're still available for a reason, because it's franchise-changing money that has to be committed to those guys. The Brewers got to be smart with a one-year deal to a Nelson Cruz or a one-year deal to a Jorge Soler, something like that, to maximize their window while it's open, and decide how many outfielders do they really want to carry, how many extra bats and right-handed bats do they want to carry. We'll get into that in our question segment, but I think it's personally shocking that all these guys still haven't been signed, especially now that camp has officially opened. It's interesting. I try to think why they haven't signed, but I can't come up with a good reason.
Well, I want to go back to your point about the Brewers' record payroll at this point, and I'm just looking at the numbers here. Christian Yelich is the top paid player for the Brewers at $22 million, then Lo Kane at $17 million. Then it drops off all the way down to $8.5 million to Colton Wong, and then Hader at $8 million. So, and then Hunter Renfro's due $7.5 million. My point in saying this is the top three guys are guys that obviously Christian Yelich was traded for, and now he's getting into his post-arbitration year type extension, right? He would have been a free agent this last year, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. Lorenzo Cain was a free agent. Colton Wong was a free agent. Everybody else is still arbitration numbers, right? So that's very, very interesting. My point in saying this, a testament to how good this front office has been with acquiring and developing talent, and these guys are owed a lot of money in arbitration because they're that good and they're still not free agents. And so that's something to behold, really. And that's something to, I would imagine that's probably by far the best in baseball, if there's a stat for that in some way. But yeah, I mean, $110 million payroll, and most of these guys are homegrown or traded before they become free agents. So that's a really, really cool thing that David Stearns and Matt Arnold have been able to kind of orchestrate.
Well, it is Mailbag Monday. We are going to get to your questions here in just a moment. Let's talk about Built Bar, though, first. Here we are mid-March. Maybe you're sitting snacking on the couch during all the tournament games that have been happening this last week and getting ready for spring training. But hey, we got to get into game shape. We got to show up to camp in the best shape of our lives, right, Vinny? That's what you hear ad nauseum this week, and Built Bar can help you get there. You can try their awesome puffs, too. They're one of the best-tasting products that Built has to offer. It's like a protein-infused marshmallow. They're fluffy. They're not just a protein bar. They're a treat, and they're covered in 100% real chocolate. The puffs are a fan favorite. They've got cinnamon churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. The actual bars have their own flavors too, like mint brownie and coconut almond. They've got new flavors every month. You can see their entire lineup at built.com. The macros are insane. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. You can use our promo code to try your first Built Bars today at built.com, B-U-I-L-T, to get locked on. Use locked 15. Sorry, locked 15 is the promo code. I've been reading this for like 2 months and I still stutter on it. Locked 15, 15% off your order at built.com. Again, Locked 1-5, 15% off at built.com. Okay, Vinny, let's get to these questions here on this Mailbag Monday. A few of these overlapped, and the hot topic is Nelson Cruz and the designated hitter and what things are going to look like for the Brewers DH. So one question was asked by Michael about it. Joe also asked about the DH. Does that become split duty between Keston and someone else picked up? Oh, what do we have to look forward to? Is Braun coming back as a full-time DH? No, he's not coming back. That'd be fun, but no. We've mentioned this previously. It feels like every Monday we get a question like this. Who's going to be the DH? I still think it's Keston Hira's job to lose.
Yeah, I think it's Keston's, and then they're just going to kind of spell the regulars in the DH role. I mean, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, I would say that that's probably 95%. The what's going to happen. I can see them, you know, kind of seeing and testing out, like at times during the season, Chris Singleton and, or I'm sorry, John Singleton, right? Yeah. Yes. Chris Singleton coming out of broadcasting retirement. John Singleton and Tyler White as big right-handed bats and see where they're at. Both have been productive in the minor leagues the last couple of years. Singleton, look at his numbers from the Mexican League. It's quite alarming. I can see those guys getting called up and just giving a few at-bats, seeing what they can do. But otherwise, I do think it's Keston's job, like you said, and then also spelling the regulars, giving them kind of a day off from the playing in the field. I can see that's how the DH role plays out.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to sign anybody. I think you stick to this internally. Because there is a jam in the outfield, and this comes from Erica's question, with Keston starting outfield work as well, that's something that he's adding to his repertoire now, which is something that you've predicted long, long time on this show, that where does Tyrone Taylor fall into the outfield equation? Do we keep 5 outfielders on the roster? Well, let's look back to last spring. Having 5 outfielders on the roster kind of saved you, because Christian Yelich missed all that time with his back. You had Lorenzo Cain hurt with his quad and his hamstring injuries. You needed all of your outfielders all of a sudden. And although Jackie Bradley Jr. didn't provide with the bat, he was still one of the best defensive outfielders in the game. I'm all cool with depth, especially at the start of the year in a condensed spring training. Tyrone Taylor is going to find his way onto this roster. And they are, by the way, still considering whether or not to expand the rosters here. They're still going to figure this out this next week to open the season with maybe 28 guys as opposed to 26 because it is so condensed, which would help a guy like Tyrone Taylor. But yes, I think Tyrone is your 4th outfielder right now. Fill in DH if Keston isn't performing, or maybe wants to give him a day off, or and vice versa. If you want to give Renfro a day off in right field, they put Tyrone out there. He can be your backup center fielder. If Kane needs a day off, there's a lot you can do with Tyrone. He's staying on the roster.
Yeah, Tyrone Taylor is a valuable player. He proved to be a valuable player last year with some really, really big hits. Dude had like 30 RBIs and an insanely low amount of plate appearances, like 150 or something like that. It was super productive, big home runs in spots. I mean, he's made some changes to his body and to the swing. productive outfielder as well. I think he's a serviceable center fielder, in my opinion. I hesitate to say this because I want to see the kid play out there a little bit more. Well, I don't. I want Lo Kane to be healthy all year, but I do think at some point they're going to have to bring in some sort of contingency plan with a very defensive-minded center fielder, at least even on a minor league deal, just because you do – this team is still built around starting pitching, relief pitching, and defense. And they are. That is just a fact of the matter. So I do think that they are going to need to have a solution if Tyrone Taylor ends up needing to start in center field. I think they're going to need to bring someone else in.
And to that point, with Tyrone Taylor having positional versatility, he is the only backup center fielder on the roster, albeit serviceable or league average, whatever you want to call it. He is your only backup center fielder on the roster. So he needs to be available because Lo Kane has shown he has leg injuries. He is getting older, and it's something to have depth. It's a good thing to have depth, and then you figure it out as the season goes along. Speaking of outfielders and designated hitters, Baseball for All 5 asked, should the Brewers pursue Jorge Soler? We kind of mentioned this in the previous segment. He's going to be expensive. Yes, it's a bona fide power threat, but it's right-handed. It's a marginal outfielder, and there's a lot of swing and miss. And sorry, but you kind of already have that with Keston Hira. So why are you going to go spend money on that? And when you already have that on your roster, include not only Keston, but you've also got Hunter Renfroe, who has a similar profile as well. Better defensively, too.
I don't see I would avoid Jorge Soler. I know he was awesome for the World Series winning Atlanta Braves last year. I do think it was probably one of those situations. I haven't heard terrible things about him. I've heard mixed reviews on his makeup, and it seems to be that the Brewers don't bring in guys with a little bit of a, you know, again, I don't want to say like questionable makeup whatsoever. I just, again, here in watching him play over the years, it's just there is some lapses. There is some, you know, tendencies to be lazy. Now, with that said, Brewers sign him tomorrow and all of a sudden they take him under their wing and he gets gobbled up in this really good winning culture and he never has an issue like that all year long. So that could be the case, but I just don't see them bringing this guy in, especially with the dollars that he's going to command.
Couple more questions here. One comes from Brock. Is Robin Yount going to be hanging around spring training this year? I hope so. I didn't see him at minor league camp when I was out there last week, but I'm sure he'll pop up here and there if he's not on the golf course. And then he also asked, do you expect Ashby to be the fifth starter this year? And I will counter with that, Brock, saying, I don't know if Ashby's going to be the fifth starter, but I'm pretty certain there's going to be six starters in this rotation, especially given how condensed this schedule has become, losing off days and having nine-inning doubleheaders in a roster that's already used to having a six-man rotation. I think there's going to be a six-man deep rotation where Ashby can be the spot starter, but he'll primarily be maybe out of the bullpen depending on how camp goes. I think it's Lauer and Hauser at the 5-6 to be with Ashby if you want to throw him in there too. So then you have all three of those guys to help with the three-headed monster of Peralta, Burns, and Woodruff. What about you?
I think Ashby is probably going to be deployed as that sixth starter at times during the year, depending on off days and stuff like that. It's all going to be dependent on how many days rest the other five get. I do think Ashby's going to be an option for them to start. But if not, I wonder, I'm just thinking out loud here, Dom, and I love doing this. I love analyzing this stuff. I wonder if he's going to be a guy that is available to be that sixth starter and then just optioned up and down. Now that option rule has changed, has it not, this year?
Correct.
You can only get optioned five times?
Five times.
Five times. Okay, so that may play into how this all plays out for Aaron Ashby's young career. And they do want to make sure that they control this guy for a long time, not to play with service time and stuff like that, but he is going to be a valuable member of this starting rotation eventually. Maybe not this year quite yet as far as like moving up into that three hole or whatever. He's certainly capable of all that. I'm just curious if he's going to be that sixth man and kind of optioned up and down depending on off days, but we'll see. It's going to be interesting how that all plays out.
I think he's going to be the sixth man as needed, as you mentioned. I agree with that 100%. A couple more here as we get ready to wrap up on this Monday edition of Locked On Brewers. Would you rather, this comes from Tom, would you rather see Urias as a starting third baseman or use him as a super utility with probable injuries? Utility would probably mean a trade. Well, I think you got a little bit of both there. I mean, he is going to be the starting third baseman. It's if Colton Wong goes down, he just slides over to second. If Adames goes down, he slides over to short. He has that availability, and then he figure out third because he got Mike Brasso on the roster as well. So he can be the, and he also got Jace Peterson still on the roster. You can have these extra infielders that can be all over the place. So he is your starting third baseman as of right now, and a backup utility role if somebody needs a day off or if somebody's injured.
Yeah, it's amazing how Craig Counsell is kind of like throwing the book to throwing the book out the window to the traditional ways of kind of needing to deploy these guys every day. You got to pencil them in at third base, you know, whatever the case. I do think that is the case for a Willy Adames and for a Colton Wong, but everybody else is kind of like all hands on deck. I do think, to your point, Luis Urias is your starting third baseman. He's your opening day third baseman, and he's going to probably play there 75% of the time. But just what you said, Colton Wong needs a day off, Luis Urias can certainly play second base. Willy Adames needs a day off, Luis Urias can step in and play very – minus those three games or whatever it was where he had three errors.
He can play short is what you're trying to say.
Exactly. So he'll be able to be serviceable there. And he's super productive offensively. I mean, he's proven that. He's going to continue to prove that. At the end of the day, he's your third baseman for the majority of the games.
And then our last question comes from Michael. What are you most or least looking forward to with the upcoming league year? And we lost Vinny.
Nope, I'm here.
So I lost you there for a second. All right, I'll just redo it. And our last question comes from Michael. What are you most and least looking forward to with the upcoming league year? And I'll start with the least looking forward to is the chaos of how condensed this schedule is going to be. It has not been finalized yet. There's going to be off days lost, doubleheaders. We're going to be worried about injuries again. But it's a get-it-in type year. We're playing 162 for a reason, and that's going to be the toughest part about it. What I'm most looking forward to is the race that the National League will have, because the Mets are loading up. The Mets are going to be really competitive. The Cardinals are going to be really competitive in this own division. The Cubs are still lurking in the running for Correa, which could change the Central completely. And then you look at the Phillies are ready to spend two or maybe acquire a Matt Chapman. The National League is going to be a lot of fun, as well as the American League, but the National League is going to be a whole lot of fun to follow.
Least looking forward to is nothing. I can't wait for baseball to start, so I'm not even going to go there. In my mind, most looking forward to, I'm most looking forward to kind of what you said, the competitiveness to this season, especially with the 12-team playoff. Mm-hmm. I think at the trade deadline, it's going to be absolute bananas. I think teams are going to be acquiring from the teams that are kind of still tanking or developing still, you know, like the Orioles and the Rangers are not anymore. They're certainly going for it. Yeah. So, the A's, teams like that. So, we will see what happens there. I'm just really excited about this season, and I can't wait to get it going.
All right, a long first episode of this week. We will be back with a few more episodes this week. We're planning everything out as spring training begins on Friday. There's an actual game being played on Friday, Vinny. It's here.
I can't wait. Yes.
We're almost there. We are almost there. He's Vinny. I'm Dom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here later this week. Until next time, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.